Clare FM's Morning Focus.
In association with Frank Hogan, Mercedes-Benz Limerick. Serving Clare and the Midwest. Your local Mercedes-Benz dealer. Visit frankhogan.ie for exceptional offers.
And a very good morning. I hope you're well. It's Gavin here with you until 12. Coming up this morning, mortgages from your credit unions already happening in Clare. Could it soon be a bigger part of our financial futures? And if so, what does it mean for prospective house buyers? A reindeer run for motor neuron disease. A novel event comes to the flaggy shore. We'll meet the local man who's inspired it all. The books you should buy for the reader in your life this Christmas. Or maybe music's your thing? I'll speak with Sharon Shannon. Fundraising in Six Mile Bridge in Ennis. The Samaritans mark the longest night. Some festive treats in store. Jobs in East Clare. And vet John Underhill joins us too. So loads to get to on the programme this morning. We'll start as always by taking a look at the papers. Our Morning Focus producer Fiona McGarry is with me. Good morning to you, Fiona.
Good morning, Gavin.
And thanks very much for joining us. I think, I suppose we'll start off with the main story as it is in the Irish Times and in the Irish Examiner this morning. I was going to go elsewhere and I'll go back to that story in a moment. But again this morning, both papers lead with the evidence heard yesterday at the inquest into the deaths of the Hall family, Alan Hall, who confessed to the murder of his wife and their three sons in August of 2016. Once again, there is harrowing evidence this morning, Fiona. Perhaps not to the same extent as yesterday. I don't know if that's because of the nature of the evidence that was heard on day two. But you know, the senselessness of it all continues to hit home more than any words could, I suppose.
That's right, Gavin. And there's extensive coverage of the fact that Mr. Hall was suffering from a very severe mental illness. And I suppose, Gavin, it does highlight the importance of people reaching out and getting help. And you'll be speaking with the Samaritans later this morning. And just that number is 116123. And that's a round the clock number for anybody affected by these issues.
And right across to Christmas as well, to point that out, because it can be a very difficult time, I know, for so many people. As you say, Fiona, we hear in the pieces this morning how Alan Hall was suffering from a severe mental illness condition. He was also, according to the Examiner this morning, facing a fall from his position as a pillar of the community, and he had fears too for his marriage. He left his parents a note asking that he not be forgiven. That's according to the headline of the Irish Times this morning, and we will leave that particular story at that. The story I was going to go with first of all, but I'll get to now, is the lead of the Irish Independent, one which will have local resonance given that it occurred in Limerick City. Rosie strangled after seeing burglar's face. This is the headline over a piece which posits the theory that according to the paper has been worked on by Gardaí, that strangled pensioner Rosie Hanrahan saw the face of the person who's believed to have killed her following an attempted break-in at her home in Thomondgate in Limerick City. She's thought to have surprised the intruder, who believed that the property was empty at the time. We're also told in the front page here how visually impaired 77-year-old farmer from County Offaly was viciously beaten with a stick and threatened with a knife as three masked men ransacked his home in County Offaly on Monday. And then inside the Independent, I thought a strong piece by Ralph Regal. It's terrible. You can see how people are so frightened. That's a quote from local Limerick TD Willie O'Dea. But Ralph Regal writes in part how in this tight-knit working-class community, many locals have either taken down their Christmas lights or simply aren't turning them on as a mark of respect to the kind-hearted pensioner who was brutally murdered in her own home. Gardaí continuing at their investigations and appealing to the public for information as they do just that.
Yeah, Gavin, and you used the word senseless, I think, in relation to those crimes, and it really does capture the
all three of them.
Tragic waste of those situations. And there are some political matters, Gavin, in the papers today. I suppose it's kind of that end of year when the pollcors are dusting off the stories and looking at what might be ahead for 2016. In terms of the political news yesterday, we learned that Sean Gallagher, who was a presidential candidate back in 2011, made a significant settlement with the national broadcaster RTÉ. That was reported here on Clare FM News. Harry McGee is writing about that in today's Irish Times, and he notes that the tweet that downed Sean Gallagher's presidential campaign, he says, was fake news long before the term was ever invented. There is a handy summary, and I suppose, you know, you would think that this campaign would be very vivid in our memories, Gavin, because it's the most recent presidential election, but it is 6 years ago now.
That's right.
It was a very bruising campaign for all involved, but none more so than Sean Gallagher. In late October, the article tells us, the presidential election campaign entered its final week. This was back in 2011. A slightly unexpected candidate, that's Sean Gallagher, who was the youngest, Gavin. He emerged as a front runner. Weekend opinion polls gave the former Dragon's Den panellist a commanding lead, 43% support, compared to his next nearest rival, which was Michael D. Higgins, on 26%. But in the final TV debate, as we know, on the front line, which was before a live studio audience, Conscience, and it was chaired by Pat Kenny, no longer with the national broadcaster.
Of course, yeah.
Gallagher's campaign went into absolute meltdown. And for anybody watching this, I remember watching it and being absolutely glued to the seat.
For a campaign that had so many debates, because there must have been 20 plus between various media, that was the last one. And I remember, like you, being blown over by it, because so much, and not just this tweet, and we won't get into some of the other bits of it, but so much happened on that night. It was an extraordinary piece of television.
It really was an extraordinary piece of television, and perhaps, Gavin, unfortunately for the national broadcaster, for all the wrong reasons. Sean Gallagher had presented as an independent candidate, but we know that leading up to, and there was an awful lot of mud thrown in this presidential campaign at all of the candidates, but leading up to the final weeks, his opponents had accused him of being a proxy for Fianna Fáil. And back in 2011, you know, just after the general election, the party, as Harry McGee says here, was nigh on untouchable. It has redeemed its reputation, possibly, arguably, a little bit since. But there was a poor performance on the programme by Gallagher himself. Now, that is probably a fair comment. He probably didn't do himself justice, but that was severely compounded by a false tweet which was read out live by the presenter, Pat Kenny, which wrongly claimed that a man had given Gallagher money for a Fianna Fáil fundraiser. Now, yesterday, as we heard here on Clare FM News and elsewhere, Gallagher received what his solicitor described as substantial damages and an apology for RTE. Harry McGee says that while there are other factors that probably caused Gallagher's campaign to nosedive in the final week, he said the damage was undoubtedly done by that tweet. And listeners might remember, Gavin, even though there was a correction sent in to Frontline from Sinn Féin, because this tweet purportedly came from a Sinn Féin account, there was never a correction made on air. And even when Sean Gallagher appeared with Pat Kenny on RTE Radio the next day, there was never a correction. So RTE, I mean, as we know, had extensive internal investigations. It published an inquiry. It published the findings of an inquiry into the whole process of making the programme. But it's culminated in yesterday's settlement.
Indeed. And the Irish Independent reports this morning that the settlement figure is believed to be in the region of €130,000. So certainly significant indeed. Back to the front pages then. And a couple of papers, The Examiner, union disappointed at lack of progress in Ryanair talks. This is the Impact Trade Union, who are working in tandem with IALPA in relation to its proposals for a union recognition agreement at Ryanair. Ryanair strike threat remains is the headline over the same story in the Irish Times. We're also told how universities across Ireland have promised to do more to promote competition between suppliers of gown hire and other services to graduating students. This is after the Irish Times established a number of companies supplying gowns and photography services to graduating third level students are all controlled by the same London owner and all operate from the same Dublin address, and as I recall it are all very expensive when you're going
very
through
graduation. Gavin, that's right, and you really don't have much of a choice.
Absolutely no choice, and you have to get it.
And you have to get it. Do they give guys hats anymore? Because I know in certain colleges it's only the female graduates who actually get to wear the cap.
I think the guys don't. Didn't wear a cap, but it's a long time ago, so I couldn't be even certain.
I thought it was a little bit unfair. I know when I graduated, guys were banned from having the hats.
It was always... The way it was described to me at one point was that it was capped because the tradition was that a woman would go no further in her education. But I don't know.
Oh gosh.
I don't know if that was... It never sounded quite right to me, but this is the story that was going around in here.
Okay, yeah, it always struck me as a little bit odd because everybody wants the graduation photo where everybody's throwing the hats
in the air.
Well, yesterday, Gavin, I picked a story from the papers which concerned two sheep getting married at the Mart in Kenmare. So hopefully you've gone one better today. A story in the Irish Examiner today about a robot cat which will do simple tasks for elderly people and people living alone in their own homes, in order to keep them in their own homes. I'm not entirely convinced, but this is the story. US scientists are developing a robot cat to keep older people company, remind them to take their medicine and help them to find their glasses. It's been developed by the toy maker Hasbro and scientists at Brown University in Rhode Island. They've received a $3 million grant from the National Science Foundation to add artificial intelligence to Hasbro's Joy for All robotic cat, which already exists. It's out there on the market. There's lots of these, Gavin, you know, where parents don't really want to buy the pet.
Don't have to clean up
the mess that goes along with the pet and the feeding, so they might buy the toy cat instead. But this Joy for All cat, which I haven't come across myself, it's going to receive artificial intelligence. So stand by, this is going to be an interesting one. The robot cat has been on the market for about 2 years. It's a companion for the elderly. It purrs and meows, we're told. It licks its paws and rolls over for a belly rub. But the project will see it develop additional capacities for the cat to help older adults with simple tasks. masks. Now, I was disappointed here. We're told that it won't iron, it won't wash the dishes, but it won't have a conversation either. But they're really good at providing comfort. And I think they're fitted with all kinds of alarms to remind people to take medication at particular times, to find lost objects, and to remind the owner to call somebody or to go to a doctor's appointment. The shape of things to come, Gavin.
Could you get an attachment to a robot cat?
I really don't know.
That'd be my only question in that, you know.
I would doubt it, but...
Yeah, I would too. That might be the problem, but...
And what if the batteries run out? It's not much help to you then. Is it rechargeable? All of the logistical questions.
Absolutely. Well, 3 million grand, you'd like to hope they can...
You could overcome that one.
Fiona, thanks very much. Fiona McGarry there, a Morning Focus producer. A couple of other bits. Lease approved for Galway Offshore Energy Test Site. This is inside the Irish Times. Not sure if people in parts of North Clare will be able to see this one. It's being located in Spittal, but we're told it's a controversial project. But it did get the green light there, as I mentioned, in terms of an approval of its lease. And also on the front of the Times then, Kerry radiologists worked out of hours. A higher number of out of hours radiological tests are carried out at University Hospital Kerry last year than in other similar hospitals across the state. We're told that, of course, in the wake of the re-examination of tens of thousands of scans that were conducted there. Urban house building stagnates. Figures in the Construction Industry Federation reported on the front page of the Examiner. For example, in Limerick, we're told how in both city and county, 341 units have gotten underway this year. That is an increase of one home in the year. And also autopsy on man found at foot of stairs. That is an incident in Cork. And also emanating from Cork, Garda Romanians flown in to beg on streets. Garda Chief Superintendent Barry McPolin has been speaking at a meeting of Cork City Joint Policing Committee and revealed that Gardaí found return airline tickets to Romania in the possession of members of a group who were arrested in the city recently for obstruction and later prosecuted for offences under begging legislation. A couple of other bits then as well inside the Examiner, where we're told how cystic fibrosis campaigner Orla Tinsley has tweeted that she is on life support in the US. She's had a number of false starts as she awaits a transplant, and her thoughts are very much with her. And there's a profile of Mick Wallace, which I won't go through, on page 6 of the Examiner. I will highlight it only to point out that rather unusually for the paper, the background of this, literally the bit behind the font, behind the headline, is in pink. Which is obviously a nod to Mr. Wallace himself. And then a couple of other pieces from inside the Independent that I wanted to get to. The report here on how the Queen, according to other reports, is to join Pope Francis on a visit to Northern Ireland next year. We know he's also going to Dublin. So what that means for a local papal visit, one would suggest it looks rather unlikely that he will come west, although that is just my own analysis. We will see what happens in that going forward. And evidence of UFOs even, is on page 29 of the Independent, where a former head of the Pentagon's secret UFO hunting bureau believes, quote, "We may not be alone." Luis Elizondo's admission came after declassified footage showed US fighter pilots reacting with astonishment as they observed an unknown aerial object off California in 2014. Let us know what you think of that at home. We will get to your comments in a short little while. Now, I want to begin this morning by examining reports this week that dozens of credit unions could be offering mortgages by the end of next year. A pilot project has been launched that will see a small number of the member-owned lenders offering home loans. If proved successful, it's expected up to 30 credit unions could be issuing mortgages by the end of next year, although some are already doing so. At least one here in Ennis, St. Francis Credit Union, whose general manager is Louis Fay. Good morning to you, Louis.
Good morning, Gavin.
And thank you very much for joining us in the programme this morning. When did you start offering mortgages?
We started to look at this as part of our strategy in 2016. Late 2016, we started to look at ways of increasing our loan book and also serving our members on a better footing, I suppose.
Sure.
Because we were getting quite a bit of interest from members who were not being served by other financial institutions in terms of mortgage lending.
Okay. And is there, in terms of the typical mortgage that you offer, be it in terms of its length or its size, is there any difference between a credit union mortgage and one from one of the traditional banks?
No, I mean, in terms of the regulations and in terms of all the requirements, no.
Okay.
I mean, they're pretty much the same. The regulations are in place by the central bank. We are regulated by the central bank, so they could basically come in and do an audit of us, and all the stuff will come out in the wash. But yeah, so we treat everything exactly the same as the banks. So we do.
Okay, and then in terms of the product that you're offering to the customer, do you go to the same levels in terms of how much you are lending? Do you go for 30-year loans?
No. I mean, internally, we are doing up to 25 years.
Okay.
Up to a maximum age of 65 years of age because of people's retirement age. Now, that might change given the recent changes to the length of our working lives. But just right now, it's up to the age of 65. And I suppose we also have maybe a risk appetite or a risk tolerance level. So we base everything on risk.
Mm.
And so, we certainly wouldn't have the type of appetite that the banks would have, like, in terms of this. And I suppose the other great difference is that we are not dependent on ECB rates or movement rates or anything like that. So we're not.
Okay.
Because we have our own funds, basically. And we use our own funds, our own members' funds, basically. We still take, in part of the mortgage, we still take first charge or a mortgage of the property. That's still...
That's standard.
It's pretty standard stuff. People still need to take out house insurance. And I suppose the one benefit that we have is that we insure all our members' lives.
Okay.
So when somebody takes out a loan, be it a personal loan or a mortgage loan, we immediately insure their lives. And should they pass onto the next world during the term of the mortgage, then the loan is written off.
Okay.
And there is no extra cost in that. That's something that
that's
we bear.
That's something you're doing. And that's just for home loans, I presume? Or?
Well, no, it's for every loan.
Okay.
It's for every loan. So that's how we treat every loan.
Going back to what you talked about with risk, are you in effect saying that for somebody to be approved for such a significant loan with St. Francis Credit Union that they will have to demonstrate to a pretty high level that they're going to pay this back?
Yes. Look, everything is on an ability to repay. It's not about asset backed or anything like that. I mean, we have to, we stress all of our loans on the basis that, that interest rates rise or that somebody's income falls. I suppose the last thing that credit unions, as a general rule, wants to be in a situation where kind of repossession issues are raised, because that doesn't sit well with us, I suppose.
Wouldn't sit with your ethos.
Not really, no. And I suppose you were asking about the kind of difference that we have. Like a lot of the loans that we've actually been doing is reconstruction loans. So in other words, somebody who wants to put on two extra bedrooms onto their house, they don't have a current mortgage on the house.
Mm.
They need 50,000, 60,000 euro loan, but don't want it on as a personal loan. We can package it as a mortgage loan, right? And it's a kind of, it goes over a longer term. It's at a reduced interest rate and like all the benefits of that. So that's one of the major differences from what we can see in other banks. From what we can see in the banks is that they're not really interested in those kind of smaller type loans.
They want the full.
They want the full big ones. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, when we hear then of this trial, does that affect you in any way, or what's your assessment of that? I suppose.
Okay. So what we were approached about this, maybe 16 or 18 months ago, and we thought it was a really excellent idea, but we just thought that it was going to be cumbersome, and it wasn't going to suit our timing.
Yeah.
So, certainly we will be happy to look at this type of product, I suppose. But the other side of the coin is that we feel that we have enough in-house experience to manage our own book, and we know our own risk profiles.
But that's referring to yourselves and St. Francis Credit.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
This is going to be somewhat hit and miss, I would say, in that some of the bigger credit unions will be able to do it, sure, but a lot of them won't. I would have thought.
Yeah, no, that's a fair comment. So it is, and I suppose from that perspective, if you get a smaller credit union whose asset size of 70 or 80 million, who has this excess funds because we need to lend, then this is a perfect product. it is perfect because all the legals and all the underwriting and all that will be done for them.
Okay.
And they don't have to really worry about it.
So does that mean it's not necessarily going to be much of a game changer in the market and that it will only be open to, I don't want to say a select few, but it won't be open to everybody?
No, I think I think depending credit union by credit union, if they see that this could be part of their risk profile, then I think that smaller credit unions could certainly get involved.
Okay.
And look, the thing is that we're dealing with people on the margins. I mean, look, that's our, like, especially in terms of mortgages, we're dealing with people on those margins who for whatever reason can't get mortgages elsewhere.
Yeah.
For whatever the reason, we'll certainly sit down and we'll listen to them and see if we can work through.
Have you done many of these?
We have approximately 20 to 25 mortgages, and we have another maybe dozen on the go. They're quite a long process.
Of course,
they're pretty much hard going. But no, but look, it's fine, and it's as long as we understand that this will be a certain proportion of our loan book, you know what I mean, from risk perspective, then we're quite happy to continue looking at it.
And do you think that will be the case in most of the credit unions to whatever extent they deem appropriate?
I think so, Gavin. I look, I think like the personal lending market has become so difficult and so diverse between online and and our competition really has increased significantly in that sphere.
Mm.
I think like we need to start looking around for other avenues to lend our money, because that's how we're going to survive in this world.
You're making the money off the interest of the loans, etc. So,
absolutely.
That keeps the lights on.
Yeah, correct, yes.
Is it a competitive product?
Interest-wise, probably not terribly competitive, but it's not terribly bad either, right? Mm. So there are swings and roundabouts. The interest rate is probably not as good as the standard variable rate, but it does happen to have things like life insurance and stuff like that, which is free. So there are swings and roundabouts in it, really.
And if the ECB rate starts going up in the coming years, would that affect your customers?
No. This is the Benny.
Maybe as competitive now, but in 5 years' time, you might be more competitive. Is that fair to say? If the interest rates rise?
No, absolutely, Gavin. Like certainly our own product, is based around a 5-year fixed rate at the beginning of this thing. So everybody knows what the repayments are, and there's a ceiling rate. So we have a floor and a ceiling. It can't go above a certain level, and it can't go below a certain level. And that's how we based it.
Because I suppose, and I understand you've got to look after your own interests, but one thing that people would have hoped for in this market, while not going to the extent that we had seen before the crash, when you look at the ECB rate and you look at the rates that are being charged to customers, there is a gap. And and those who are looking to buy homes would love to see a new player or an existing player come into the market and underwrite everybody else and inject competition into it. And that's why I was asking you about the rate, and that's asking a lot of St. Francis Credit Union. I fully accept that.
Yeah.
But it's something that I think the market as a whole needs, and something that consumers would definitely want.
And I have to say to you that there are certainly kind of rumblings about German banks coming into the market and offering, because their rates are certainly 10 or 15 or 20% lower than any of the current banks.
And it'll be massive savings, certainly very significant savings, and you'll be forcing the hands of everybody else.
Absolutely. Everybody would have to buy into it in a way. But
so that may come, but you won't be sparking it just yet.
No, we won't be sparking it just yet. No. We're quite happy in our own space, yeah.
That's fair enough. Appreciate that. And we'll see this more going forward in other credit unions, you think?
I think so. I think absolutely. I think, as I said, it's become a very crowded, the personal lending space has become very, very crowded, and we have to jostle and find new products.
Louis Fay, General Manager of St. Francis Credit Union, thank you for joining us and a very happy Christmas.
Thank you very much, Gavin.
An early Christmas present yesterday for parts of East Clare. 70 new jobs announced. More on that next.
Clare FM's Morning Focus.
In association with Frank Hogan, Mercedes-Benz Limerick. Serving Clare and the Midwest. Your local Mercedes-Benz dealer. Visit frankhogan.ie for exceptional offers.